curls are back and Tony's got them.
Curls?
Yes, that's an old commercial. It was a jingle. Curls are back and Tony's got them. You can get them any way you want them. Hoop-de-doop curls. Yada, yada, yada. It goes on. You could find it yourself on a video platform near you.
What's the... Who's Tony?
Tony was the maker of a product to curl your hair.
Oh, okay.
You bought in a box at the pharmacy.
Tony's got it.
Yeah.
The curls. All right. Yeah. Nice.
Not gonna lie.
Speaking of lovely curls, hair, we're talking about bodies today, right?
Talking about bodies.
Nice.
Huh.
How's it going?
I mean,
yeah.
You know, we say that, but then sometimes one of them, it's not really about the body at all, but the word
loose.
Made you think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I think they're all pretty bodily.
Yeah, I think.
Who's excited to go first this week?
I'm jumping.
Are
over
you?
My
okay.
No, moderately. You know, moderately.
Sure.
No, moderately.
Falling all over yourself.
Yeah. You ever be listening to the radio and then someone comes on and says, well, this next story is kind of...
Yeah, you might want to viewer discretion advised.
Yeah, all that kind of thing.
Sure.
So, I mean, this isn't like that at all, but if you're really... I don't know what. I don't know. You know, just stick around and listen.
Yeah, learn.
Yeah.
I'm already... My interest has been piqued.
No, it's only that it's just funny to me, and I don't think... I cannot laugh.
Oh, well then, you know, I won't be able to not laugh.
It's one of those ones where I don't say it, and nor do I really hear it. But you also, you know, we've come to recognize there's, you know, there's other parts of the country, other parts of the world where people embrace different idioms.
Sure.
Or different versions of the idioms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different phrases.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So this is slightly one of those. Finger in every pie.
Finger in every pie.
Yeah.
All right.
Finger in every pie.
Yeah.
Be involved in a large and varied number of activities or enterprises.
There it is.
Be involved in everything that happens. Jane likes to have a finger in every pie. I always like use it in a sentence.
Sure. She's out hobnobbing, perhaps.
Perhaps. With many different... groups of hobobbery.
Yeah.
To be involved in numerous activities, usually in the sense of meddling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Meddling.
Uh-huh.
Well, that implies something. Does it? Do you feel meddling has a negative connotation? Or just as general, like, interfering, but not in any sort of specific way?
I mean, mine is tainted, as many of us, by the Scooby-Doo.
Right, those meddling kids.
Yeah.
Darn it.
I mean, they chose that word. Had they not, I wouldn't be tainted.
I hear you.
But like love,
yeah,
I am.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of things can be blamed on Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah. First, right out of the gate, I don't like the word yank. Right?
Yeah.
Right out of the gate. I'm going to give you some reference points that are shockingly relevant as we move forward. Paravol's History of This Iron Age by Bartholomew Harris, 1601.
Mm-hmm.
I bring you this from 1601, and that is in the year of our what? Shakespeare.
Yeah,
it's in the year of our Shakespeare.
Settled right in the middle of Shakespeare, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from that little production comes... Lucasia must needs, forsooth, have her finger in every pie. It's because it's got the Y
yeah.
in there, you know?
Yeah.
Forsooth, you know, we say it because it's in all these weird quotes from times yonder.
Yeah.
I realized, consarn it, I'd better look that up. To express surprise or indignation.
Yeah.
Yeah. They used that a lot. You know, it comes up in quotes, and I usually just gloss over it. Yeah, that's those crazy medieval talkers.
Just exclaiming.
Yeah, but that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
More relevant yet, perhaps, Shakespeare, Henry VIII. The devil speed him. No man's pie is freed from this ambitious finger.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also nice. Ed's the ambitious in there.
Hence the ambitious in
Feels medley.
So here came a number of stories that when you went digging, I was a little surprised by this and in a joyful way. So Henry VIII plays kind of as big of a role. It's funny, Shakespeare and Henry VIII in the end are quite likely responsible for this coming about as mm-hmm. an idiom.
Okay.
But the story of it is riveting.
Sweet.
Yeah. So are you aware of this fellow, Thomas Horner? Old Tommy Horner? Thomas Horner. So this fellow,
all right.
It's even more odd to me, you know, because you're never surprised about politics, power, money, and what goes on behind closed doors. But there seemed to be so much of it just right out in broad daylight and at all times throughout history. You thought at some point someone would have the self-respect to at least hide it.
Yeah, keep your secrets clandestine.
Yeah, but as it turns out, no. So I guess Henry VIII had this thing where he took a bunch of land from the Catholic Church and distributed it to his supporters
mm-hmm.
because he was like, well, you guys aren't going to give me taxes. I'm just going to take some of this land and use it to bribe my way into more power.
Yeah.
And it seemed easy enough. Well, this fellow Thomas Horner was quite the facilitator because he snagged, it turns out, 12 deeds of properties. And the story goes, Ray.
Yeah?
The story goes that he delivered it to the king at Christmas time.
All right.
And he did so in quite an unusual vehicle. In that he put them.
Yes.
Are you going to guess?
I'm going to guess in a pie.
In a pie.
In a pie.
You know this story.
In a pie. I don't. I'm just following where you're leading me.
He put them.
Yes.
Ray, in a pie.
In a pie.
And the king was quite pleased.
Oh.
About this. But the one thing that old Tommy boy did
mm-hmm.
Apparently was to tip himself lest the king forget. So he took a deed from one of the properties for his very own.
Okay.
Now I have to say this because in four books, count them up.
1, 2, 3, 4.
There are episodes of the Horner family protesting this version of the story and insisting that their ancestor purchased this property legally and it's not impossible.
Okay.
Seems unlikely based on the circumstances surrounding the other 11 deeds, but it's possible.
So it seems like he stole it.
Yeah.
And wasn't given it. I see.
Well, it's not so much that. He was in control of land for the king, so he took them from the church. Now, he was supposed to give all 12 of them to the king. The king knew he kept one and didn't care.
Yeah. Oh, he was like, yeah, whatever.
The family insists that Thomas bought it and he never stole anything from the church, but that's a family. What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's like he stole it, per se.
No, yeah.
But go ahead, sorry.
I'm just saying.
Yes.
Let's say he stole it from the king.
Yeah, right. You should do that. Sure.
Well, I would have.
Yeah. If you knew,
what's he going to do? So, he probably cut your head off.
They'd probably kill you, but you know.
But he wants 12 more deeds next Christmas, so yeah, why?
Come on.
You know, come on.
There's enough for everybody.
Yeah, so the guy, Thomas takes this.
Thomas Horner.
Yeah. And so that's a familiar last name to you. Why?
Nursery rhymes.
The nursery rhyme. Little Jack Horner is representative of Thomas Horner.
I see.
Sat in the corner eating a Christmas pie.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
Then he puts his thumb in this pie.
So far, so good.
And he pulls a plum out of this pie.
Yeah.
And exclaims how great he is.
Yeah.
So the plum is representative of the deed that he kept for himself.
Yeah.
And said, I deserve that because I gave the king 11 other deeds. So I'm taking that. And that was, again, here, what is presumed to be the metaphor of that little nursery rhyme.
Really?
Yeah.
So he does this. It creates some sort of news.
Yeah, people all know.
And then people start, children start chanting.
Well, someone writes it.
Or someone writes it down, you think, and then later it becomes a nursery rhyme?
No, someone writes it as a nursery rhyme as a sort of...
Like a satire.
Yeah.
Now I'm on the trolley.
I mean, but as we know, they used to plant lots of good, juicy darkness in nursery rhymes.
Oh, sure.
And so this was not an unfamiliar technique.
Yeah, I'm just trying to picture the whole scene. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I started out with Jack Horner, but I ended up with Bo Peep.
But you could do them both, right?
I could get you the pie thing, and then I also get that 12 and 20 blackbirds mixed in with the pie. So I was like, does he pull out a blackbird? I know he pulls something out of the pie. Yeah, well, they were all running simultaneously.
So, and there's a good reason for that. Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating a Christmas pie.
I'm off one. Sorry, go ahead.
He put in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, what a good boy am I.
Yeah, yeah, right.
That's that one.
That's that one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was going, he sat, whatever. And then it went to the curds and whey. After he sat down, he was now on the hillside.
You could do a mashup of nursery rhymes there.
Yeah, I was like, well, this isn't right.
So going back now to where... we started the Shakespeare from Henry VIII play, The Devil Speed Him, no man's pie is freed from this ambitious finger.
Mm-hmm.
However, that is a permutation. Well, I use that word a lot.
Yeah. Well.
It's a variation, precursor, but not really.
No?
It's just a sister of the idiom. Because this here, Bartholomew Harris, 1601, Perivale's History of This Iron Age, Lusatia must needs, forsooth, have her finger in every pie.
Mm-hmm.
Look, 1601.
Yeah.
And that is attributed to being the originator of the idiom, though Shakespeare had formulated that variation on it earlier.
Mm-hmm. The idea.
Yeah, Bartholomew Harris carved it into stone, wood, and
parchment.
Parchment, and that's the simple, quick story of finger in every pie, an idiom that I do not use, but others seem to.
I'll have to keep my ear to the ground to see if I hear that one more often.
Your ear to the ground,
my ear to the ground. I'll have to keep my ear to the ground.
Yeah.
To hear if I hear that.
Yeah, that's what you said, yeah.
Yeah, that's mine. Ear to the ground.
Yeah, ear to the ground.
To be on the alert, to seek out information.
Boldly go where no man, no.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to do it.
Ear to the ground. Yeah.
I've said this.
Yeah, we do this, yeah.
We do this, we say that. I'll keep my ear to the ground about that. I feel like it has a positive, or it has like no connotation. It's just like I'm going to listen up for that. I'll pay attention.
Right, a friend might be asking you for a job reference, and you're like, yeah, I know your specialties, and maybe I'll hear about a job. I'll keep my ear to the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would say generally, at least according to my indoctrination in the public schools here, that they... will attribute this, and it seems erroneously, I will say, to the Native American folk here. They said they practiced putting an ear to the ground to detect the vibrations of sounds in the distance before can actually be heard out in the open air. There's a French author and diplomat, François-René de Chateaubriand, 1827 quotes. He mentioned them specifically as Indians in his quote, as we know, they are not Indians, they are Native Americans, but saying that they will clap their ears to the ground and judge by murmurs inaudible to a European ear at what distance the enemy is. That was 1827. We can go back even earlier in time to 1803, which sort of removes that, you know, Native Americans were the first or whatever people to do these things.
Yeah.
We're in Sussex in England, which is in southern England. Just a quote, Times of London, talking about basically sending out marksmen or soldiers to kind of protect land. And they're saying in this longer quote, at night, should the sentinel be doubtful of anyone's approach, let him put his ear to the ground and you'll hear some footsteps perhaps. And we can go back even to 1773. There's earlier quotes. So we're kind of blowing that, what I learned in school, out of the water.
Right.
The first sort of figurative use seems to happen around 1815 in an advertisement published in what's the Connecticut Courant. Courant.
Yeah, I subscribe to that. No.
The Connecticut Courant.
Yeah.
And a going from the small sum of $5. Going, 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 bid quick or it's gone. But few more tickets can be sold at prime cost. Remember the 21st November. On that day, the wheels will be put in motion. You may put your ears to the ground and you will hear the great sounds of the eagles and dollars roar like the ocean.
Hmm.
Yes.
That's a lot.
That's 1815. It's kind of the first figurative use, like I said. And then 1835, we get some more political uses of, you know, people keeping some things to the ground. But Jay, why would one put their ear to the ground? I mean, it seems like these folks are using it pretty literally, right?
Yeah, I think the Native American one was made it seem really crystal clear. If there was even some horses running a mile away, you might feel that or hear some low frequencies.
You're going to hear some stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's due to sound waves, if you will.
What just comes to my mind and my heart now is sound. We're touching each other. We're embracing each other. We're loving each other. We're helping each other with sound. The right kind of sound is the greatest magic in the world, and it's given to us freely, freely, for all of us to share. What more do you want?
Which is cool. Sound is a wave that requires a medium through which to travel, if you will. And sound waves are longitudinal waves. So the wave moves in a back and forth motion, or the wave's back and forth motion kind of happens in the same direction as the wave is traveling versus like a ripple wave, which happens perpendicular to the way it's traveling.
Perpendicular.
Yeah, the ripple waves kind of come up across their medium, but sound waves travel through their medium. Like if you take a slinky and if you shake the slinky up and down, that is like an ocean wave, right? You see it wobbling up and down and up and down. But if you stretch that slinky and you sort of push one side to the other side, if it's stretched pretty, you know, so it's not saggy, that's a longitudinal wave. It passes through the slinky as you push it.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you got me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the ripple wave is sort of an amplitudinal.
It's a sine wave.
Yeah.
In the way that we would talk about it, yeah.
Right.
And as, right, so you would, it's if you lift your hand up and down your left hand, you're creating a sine wave versus a tight slinky that you sort of push. A little bit of a push, and it sends that push
right
equally through the slinky.
Yes.
And it doesn't wobble the slinky. It more sends it through the slinky. Right?
Yeah. I think it was, while it may have annoyed some, it was good to get you to explain it
a
couple, so that, you know,
totally,
we're all on board.
Yeah, I want to make sure that that's clear, because that's important to what we're talking about. So yeah, the slinky that I'm using as an analogy is essentially particles. As we say, as I say, we're particles in a void, as people say, dust in the wind. Mm. So sound waves require a medium through which to travel. And in their sort of travel, they create not only sound waves, but they create pressure waves because of the way the compression goes through. It creates low and high pressure, you know, as the wave travels through, as it kind of, I don't want to say ripple, but it kind of carries itself through, you know?
Yeah.
The speed of sound in perfect conditions, optimal conditions, I'll say, is around 332 meters per second, which is close to 1,100 feet per second. And like I said, in optimal conditions, because, you know, if it's warmer or colder, that affects how sound travels, because it needs a medium, and heat and cold change the natures of the medium which sound travels.
Dig it.
The cool thing is sound travels faster in mediums which are closer together, more tightly bound. You can hear things underwater farther away than you can hear things on land, because it's a medium through which it travels that's a little thicker, a little stickier. The molecules are closer together. So saying that, sound travels fastest through solid matter, because the molecules in the solid are much, much closer together than in a liquid or a gas, as we know from some level of science class. I don't remember when we learned that. I saw that sound waves actually travel 17 times faster through steel than they do through our atmosphere.
Through steel.
Steel, yeah. Sound, it's interesting because it is, like I said, it's measured in powers. It's measured in pressure levels as well as amplitude and loudness, which is, you know, similar. We measure sound in bells, or as we do in our business for sure, most people are familiar with, a tenth of a bell or a decibel, right?
Yeah.
And sound is power. So what I learned in my college acoustics class, it was a great teacher. A doubling of power is 3 dB. 10 times a power is 10 dB. And that's what we know is a bell, one bell to the next bell, zero bells to one bells is 10 times the power.
Logarithmic.
Logarithmic. Exactly. Nice.
Yeah.
One bell to two bells, 10 times louder than one bell, the two bells, but 100 times the power. I don't want to say louder. The power of zero bells. Two trumpets are not as twice as loud as one trumpet. You need at least 10 trumpets to sound twice as loud as one trumpet.
Yeah.
Sound is cool. It moves through things. The coolest thing I learned that relates to this almost eerily is that elephants they're able to communicate in infrasonics, which are below our human level of hearing, which is about 20 hertz. 20 to 20,000 hertz is our human like level.
Yeah.
It's not that high. It doesn't go that high or that low. For sure.
Right.
I mean, whatever.
No, yeah.
Best case scenario.
No, yeah.
So infrasonics. So they can talk to each other at lower frequencies than we can hear or perceive, and seemingly from like kilometers away from each other, because also low frequency waves can travel pretty much unimpeded. I mean, it sounds like these ones could obviously travel pretty freaking unimpeded for kilometers. That's not even the cool thing. Elephants have evolved these nerve endings in their feet, which allows them to detect, hear pressure waves through the ground.
Yeah, like a bird looking for worms.
Yeah, they can. I mean, they also have these bits in their trunk, I learned, but I think I knew that. But the feet, I was like, wait, what? So there's a Stanford study that kind of recorded wild elephant sounds, warnings, greetings, you know, sounds of elephants would make. And they went elsewhere to play these sounds they recorded for other elephants via what they said, underground seismic waves. And that they did get reactions whenever they played different calls. Warning calls made some animals become agitated, and they could like actually sense these things through the toenail. It says seismic waves could travel from their toenails to the ear via bone conduction, which I thought was really cool.
It is.
So putting your ear to the ground is a literal thing you can literally do to literally hear things farther away than you can hear just out in the gaseous atmosphere that we have out here.
Or if you're an elephant, you just keep your foot to the ground.
Keep your foot to the ground, yeah.
Because that'd be hard for an elephant to get their head down there and get that ear flap up.
Flap, so just like perfectly flapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to need help. Somebody spread that flap out.
Can you help me? It folded over again.
Well, that's, so it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Sound and vibrations.
It's cool stuff. I mean, honestly, the physics of our universe is fascinating. Like, when you think about how sound works, you're like, what? It, like, speakers and diaphragms, they vibrate a thing in the air, then moves that wave towards you. It doesn't spread out. It moves a wave toward you.
Toward you?
Yeah. I mean, it spreads out, but I mean, it's just like it's pushing it at your face. I don't know. It's cool to think of particles. And I don't know. Like in space, no one can hear you scream because there's no medium for which sound to travel.
So you kill a guy in space.
Even if someone's around to hear it.
Yeah, they won't.
They can't.
Go ahead, scream, buddy.
Can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one's hearing you.
All right, on that note.
Yeah.
Let's surrender to these sounds.
Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
All right, then. I seem to feel after my workout, I might soon be fit as a fiddle.
Fit as a fiddle. Nice. Fit as a fiddle.
Yeah.
That,
so I don't say this either.
I have never said this.
I mean, I do hear it. People still do use it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just a little corny for me.
It feels...
Yeah. Although, not that I don't say corny things, always.
Sure.
I'll give you a little here up front, fiddle etymology, I like to call fiddlemology.
Fiddlemology.
So, old German from fidel, it seems like it was always, you know, a little hollow four-stringed instrument, unfretted, played with a bow.
So... Okay.
All the way from 14th century.
Oh.
This was this.
All right.
This is this.
This is this.
Yeah. Little, you know, Bobby D.
So, okay. To fiddle with something is to play a four-stringed instrument with something.
Well.
Right? I mean, we eventually get there?
We eventually get there.
Wow. Okay. Did I spoil stuff? I'm sorry.
No, nice. Not my charge. Because to fiddle is something
right.
we can always cover
yeah.
at another time. Fit is a fiddle and right. bodies is my charge.
No, sure.
Ha, keeping it on track.
Good job.
So there's an odd little dichotomy that evolved in my digging. And it was really never resolved. But it's, again, one of those things that I encounter sometimes. Oftentimes, that's a word, that an idiom might lead to a bit of this or a bit of that or a bit of just a little tiny touch of something that is not even off color, just a little etymologists and people just turn a blind eye to it and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we're in Puritan New England that's or like, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, just look at it. Would you just look at it? So this seems to be a little bit one of those. Anyway, fit did certainly and still does. So if I say to you, mean this, fit, apt for a particular use, suitable, is this a good fit?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could take that as a, you know, a square peg and a square hole. So you would say, yeah, this is a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
But also, is it apt for the job at hand? Well, if the job at hand is putting something square in that square hole, yeah, I say yes.
Very suited.
Right. But back in the day, there's protestation that fit didn't mean, as we say it today, are you fit or do you feel unfit?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning physicality, you know.
Not aptitude, right.
Right.
Gotcha.
So that comes up plenty that back then it didn't mean physicality. It only meant suitable, apt.
Mm-hmm.
But almost doesn't seem true, and I'll get to that. Mm-hmm. There were some goofy ones that came along, and they came up a number of times. The only reason I will give them any air time, but their malarkey fit as a Malleable, M-A-L-L-E-E bull. Well, this, and I'm not sure I'm saying this right because it doesn't merit me giving it extra research time, but this is an area in Australia, and a Malleable, or Molly, I'm sorry, my people in Oceania, but this is a bull from, and if you look up Malleable, just Google Malleable, for example.
All right.
All you'll get is fit as a Malleable. It doesn't even get to the bull. it only exists within itself.
Oh, okay. This one time someone said it.
Yeah. So I'm not going to honor that one. I'll have a Foster's if somebody buys me one. Another fit as a brown trout.
I have not heard that one.
And there's good reason. It's dumb and nobody says it. So I don't know why.
You're such a good swimmer. You just fit as a brown trout.
Yeah. It makes no sense at all. But there, it kept coming up, like somebody from the Brown Trout Society just...
Hey guys, what if we can...
They published it enough times, it comes up in your search. It's not in any of the books. No one cares about it. It's not real.
Yeah.
But you might encounter it out there. And so I'm just warning you. So there's that. Stuff that did come up, though, and that's the odd thing about the fiddle and the... Ooh, you got to remember, like, there was a time that was, you know, probably kind of nice in its way. Now, we didn't have penicillin and all the other stuff, but you had a simple time when live music, somebody playing some music or a little play going on in the public square, man, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have Netflix and all this. You just like, you saw a play that afternoon and that was, maybe you didn't, you know.
Months later.
Yeah.
You see something
unless
else.
Unless
you
were Samuel Pepys.
Right.
You know,
you keep going back.
Right. But a regular folk, someone playing a fiddle, that was, man, that was all you could hope for. And you loved it. So the fiddle being likened to or used in many different metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
One that came up was to hang up one's fiddle. A fool can dance without a fiddle. His face is made of a fiddle. Now, now this goes back to 17th century. And there again, I would say, you know, the fiddle was pretty and had, you know, had a romance to it. So if you wanted to liken it, like...
I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like very ornate and very... Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, very beautiful.
And people were enjoying their fiddle time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are tons of them. They're all fairly obscure. Every fool is a fiddle to the company. They're, you know... but people used it, is what I'm driving at.
Big fiddle craze.
But I'll liken you back about the business of fit meant apt and appropriate, not shape or what have you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But here, the evolution sort of fights that a little bit, and we have it. It's well documented, so I mean, I don't know how else to interpret it. 1603, Thomas Dekker in The Bachelor's Banquet writes, "Then comes down Mistress Nurse, as fine as a farthing fiddle, in her petticoat and kirtle." Now, he didn't say fit, but fine as a farthing fiddle in her petticoat and kirtle. And I always felt this, so maybe I'm a little tainted, but you have it. Look, it's just the nature of what we are.
Yeah.
And so you know, being a guitar player, even from early on, I recognized, okay, the guitar shape is kind of buxomly womanly, like even an acoustic, you know? Mm-hmm. And that extends itself back into the violin or fiddle, if you like. 1616 is where W. Houghton's Englishmen for My Money. I mean, there's so many things to read in so little time.
Those great titles. Great titles. Yeah.
This is excellent in faith, as fit as a fiddle. Now, this is the first one, and this is in faith. This is Y-N-F-A-Y-T-H. Mm-hmm. But it is the first use of it as is. Now, not pertaining to a person at all, but pertaining to an idea. But still, it encapsulates the true use of the idiom that still exists now. And now, of course, we do use it more implicitly to mean or to refer to shape, I think, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, like in referring to a person, for sure. Their fit is a fiddle.
Solely related to people's fitness.
If you will.
Well, yeah.
Fit as a fiddle.
Fit as a fiddle. I just want to execute that idea across as best as I can. And that's what I feel like I've tried to attempt.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I feel fit as a fiddle.
Yeah, it is also alliteration, right?
You know, yeah.
Fine as a farthing fiddle. It's a bit much.
It's a nice sketch.
Mm-hmm. So what have you?
I want to just thank you for
letting me
out,
be myself.
For myself, yeah. For hanging out and chewing the fat with me today. Here on the Whole Nine Yards podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. Now, chew the fat to discuss a matter, especially complainingly, to reiterate an old grievance, to grumble, to argue, to talk or chat, to spin a yarn.
Yeah, that's a lot of different possibilities.
Yeah, it really. I wanted to make sure I hit all the possibles. Well, you said possibilities. Yeah. So, you know, as you say, we're now living in the 1500s, and we're just doing the best we can every day, you know? So sometimes we may have guests over to the house, and if we wanted to impress those guests, we may bring out some bacon or some meat. And just to hang it up in the corner and show it off. Like, hey, look at this. Look at me. I can buy this meat. As a sign of wealth, a man could, and that a man could really bring home that bacon, you know? So sometimes they would cut off just a little bit of that meat to share with the guests. And then everyone would sit around and just kind of chew the fat with each other. With all your guests.
They did not.
Back in the 1500s.
This is what they did.
No, this is a ruse.
Oh, you're rusing
me. I'm rusing you. This is from a ruse, a specifically targeted, not targeted ruse, but a ruse called Life in the 1500s, which was an email in the 1999. And it's come up before, and we've had a chuckle at it in the past. Well, on this very show.
Glad I have no recall.
No, I also
chuckle again.
Yeah, it was like, wait, but no, I remember.
So
yeah,
taste it again for the first time.
I can't remember which one I first referenced it in, but we had a chuckle, and I'm like, no, it's a fake. So it's not really super old, which I was kind of surprised. But like 1885's J.B. Patterson, Life in the Ranks of the British Army in India and on Board a Troop Ship. That's the title of the work. Mm-hmm. This phrase in the same 1885 is listed with another phrase called chew the rag. Mm. And they're apparently interchangeable.
Well, the rag would take longer, you'd think.
Sure, if you're right, chewing for a reason beyond just like funsies or whatever, you know. Persisting to argue the point, or chew the rag, as is termed in the rank and file phraseology, with some extra intelligent non-commissioned officer. Then later on in the work, he says, the various diversions of whistling, singing, arguing the point, chewing the rag, or fat, just tosses the fat in there at the end, with chewing the rag. He said, the bending of ears of junior officers as a way of staving off boredom. That was the end of that quote, sorry. You know, chew the rag, chew the fat. Our buddy Robert Hedrickson from the Encyclopedia of Word and Phrase Origins says to me that this expression came about ways of our forefather sailors, as they are. Sailors working their jaws on the tough salt pork rationed. And then when supplies ran constantly low, they grumbled about their poor fare while literally chewing the fat.
Hmm.
Like, okay, I mean, I see that. There's some other ideas that relate it to the inconsequential dialogue that you may be having and relaying it to how little nutrients you get from fat. You know, you're chewing the fat, you're eating fat, you're not really getting anything. This conversation is mundane and pointless. So, you know, you're not really getting anything from it, which I like, but...
But,
you know, but we have, there's good fats, you know, we got trans fats, we got the nut fats.
Sure. Yes.
So, you know, you get nutrients from fat. Yeah.
But not all.
It's a thought. This like chew the rag. And this was what they say as complaining or grumbling, chew the rag. Some people say that it's like, oh, no. The rag was like a bag you put the tobacco in, and it like got tobacco in it, and then you would chew on it to get like a little bit of out of it, you know, like the little extra after you used it all up. Yeah. Charles Earl Funk from a work, Heavens to Betsy.
Yeah, this has come up before.
Yeah, we've had Charles Earl Funk on the show before, right? He says, you know, it's in sewing circles. You got your rags or cloth in which you're working on literally, while maybe your tongues were clattering on other rags, or perhaps the fat, as in a choice morsel of gossip upon which they could feast.
Really?
That's what Charles Earl Funk postulates to me.
Mm.
And this is all pre-1900s, obviously. So 1907... we're starting to see more chew the fats around here, but it's sort of really, they both chew the rag and chew the fat come down to the sense of just people engaged in kind of, you know, idle conversation and not really talking about anything real. They're only working their jaws, if you will. If you were to chew a rag or to chew fat, you would just be working your jaw.
So this is to say, when you hear that, see, I would think chew the fat just, it might have been constructive. It just meant we were talking.
And maybe talking, I see it as catching up or something. Totally, right.
If you're suggesting we're really saying nothing. We're wasting our time, maybe small talk, maybe just dumb stuff.
It seems to like have this early inception idea of grievance as grumbles. You know, we're chewing the rag, we're grumbling about something, we're chewing the fat, we're not happy about it. Because it's not whatever we want to talk about. But I agree, I would just use it to mean talk or chat, just in general. Like, oh, let's chew the fat over this or whatever. I got, you know? I wouldn't use it specifically to mean grumble or gripe about something.
Yeah.
Just more of, like you said, catch up or go over a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's more common for sure. I found a little fun fact that in ham radio, extended conversations just for fun, as I guess instead of just exchanging information, is called rag chewing. Don't be a rag chewer. If you hear that on ham radio, you're wasting time.
Huh.
Rag chewing.
I'm not going to do that.
No. Chewing the fat.
Chew it up. Hopefully that's not what we've done here.
No, we haven't griped. We've certainly had conversations, though. We've talked or chatted.
Yeah,
we chew the fat here every week on the old Whole Nine Yards farm.
But hit us up.
We can chew the fat.
On Instagram and tweets and Reddit.
Whole Nine Yards Pod.
Whole Nine Yards Pod, you say?
Yeah.
Is nine a number or do you spell it out like...
No. Nine is a number.
Nine's a number.
It is a number.
Thanks.
You're right, you got it.
And then Facebook message even, you could get us.
You can do that. We will keep our ear to the ground at Whole Nine Yards Podcast.
Is that nine a number?
That nine, I believe, is still a number.
Yeah.
I got to check the files.
Whole Nine Yards Podcast, nine's a number.
Yeah.
And we look forward to all communications.
Yeah.
Hopefully pleasant ones. Yeah. Informative.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Either way.
Ooh, man, we got some nasty comments last week.
Sometimes.
It happens, you know.
So we don't stay on topic all the time.
Yeah. All right, then. So until next time, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
And we're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenineyards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science.